This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm great. Look at us face to face. Ooh, and there's no barrier.
No barrier.
It's interesting. Lovely. I know. I'm all bamboozled. I'm like,
right here in,
press the right buttons.
In Zoomer Plexus. So lovely. And of course, it's busy down here because the CNE is in full swing.
And it's going to be a gorgeous day.
Yes, it
is. It's already started as a gorgeous day, but it's going to get more gorgeous.
Beautiful sunrise this morning. I love sunrises. And it was just beautiful this morning.
I can't remember the last time I saw a sunrise.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm more about sunsets.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, and many people are, but I have to say I'm more of a sunrise guy.
I know. That's why I was surprised I got here before you this morning. I thought, woof, he's usually up at 4 baking, and then he's here, right? Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah, that's what I forgot. There didn't bring any baking this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
That may have been on my list. You know what is on my list? My list is to give out the phone numbers. I would love for you to give us a call, because we're here in studio. We'd love for you to chat with us about any questions you have, indoor gardening question, outdoor gardening, transplanting, trimming,
tips
whatever.
And
tips,
techniques.
Composting. We can talk about it all. Yeah, so give us a call. If you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still within in Ontario, here's the 1-800 number, 1-866-740-4740. Okay, and do let Owen know if you're a first-time caller. And then I will give you the garden wings, okay? And we want you to call often. We want you to call early. And please, one question per call. And we are going to have Paul Oliver is going to join us from Urban Nature Store. He's going to join us later on in the show.
I was just going to say, our sponsor of the radio show is Urban Nature Store.
So Paul isn't
in the city today.
No.
But I asked him if he would join us by phone. Yep. He's out at the Oliver Farm, which is Napanee area. I visited him there. It's not far from where I live, actually.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a real drought. All of southeastern Ontario has been under extreme dry drought, to the point where even in the Quinte, whatever it's called,
Bay of Quinte.
Watershed. No, but it's sort of that whole area. They've asked people to cut right back on water use. So you said you washed your truck, and I was like, whoa, nobody's washing cars where I live.
Yeah. We had our burn in Collingwood area about 3 days ago. We had our burn ban lifted because we did have a substantial amount of rain. Fortunately, like a Tuesday of this week, we had 12 hours of rain in Collingwood, which was really nice.
Right. So Tuesday evening.
Yeah. And then it rained Wednesday as well.
Woohoo. We had some rain. Now, I can't say it was 12 hours. It did amount to 39 millimeters.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what the millimeter count was, but it was just lovely because it started about 7:30 in the morning, and it literally went till about 7:30 that Tuesday night.
Yeah, so that's
and then
great.
It did rain a little bit on Wednesday as well, and that collectively really, really greened up everything again. And
we're not greened up yet.
Yeah, so
but
that
we were
was
nice and
nice.
Moist, like much moister than we've been for a whole day or two, but now we're back to dry. So, there's no water wastage at all going on where I live. It's really, it's funny coming into the city, right? I was like, I'm having a shower while I'm in Toronto.
Well, I feel guilty now.
Exciting.
Didn't even think about it. On the way in, I just thought, okay, I'm going to run through the car wash before I didn't even think. And I suppose if there was a water ban, they would just shut them down. They would just tell you can't
run
them.
That's right. Yeah. Now, they might still be running where I live because there are a couple in Belleville and I'm close to Belleville, but I haven't even tried, right? It's one of those things where you're embarrassed to have clean hair or a clean car, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just the water situation is pretty extreme.
That's very tricky.
We're kind of hurting.
If you don't have any, do you have an announcement?
Well, I want to share something with you. You know how we talk about in the spring, we get so excited about the bulbs, tulips, the daffodils, they're coming, they're beautiful, and they make us so happy, right?
They
in
do.
The spring. So the thing is, we plant those in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plant them in the spring. No. They get planted before winter. Out in our gardens, they sleep out under the snow and under the soil all winter, and then they pop up with their beautiful colors.
And they have to have that dormancy during the winter.
They have to have the cold.
You can't plant them in the spring. They won't pop up. You have to do it.
That's right. And you don't grow tulips in Florida for that same reason, because it's not cold enough, right? You need that cold. Yeah. So a good friend of mine who runs a website called Flower Bulbs Are Us. Mm-hmm. So that's like Toys Are Us. So Flower Bulbs Are Us.com is doing a promotion. And she's doing it through this radio show. And she wants people to think about planting bulbs. She wants people to start buying bulbs to plant. They're not here from Holland yet, but they're coming. So she wants us to all start thinking about what we want, what colors, what, you know, varieties.
Yep.
Get them ordered up online. If you do that starting today, when you get to the checkout and you put in the secret code Charlie...
Charlie.
I know. How secret is that?
That is a great code. That's an easy one to remember.
There's a 10% discount.
Oh, nice.
Yes, yes. So there will be a discount if you use my name as in wherever it says secret code or promotion when you get to the checkout.
Okay.
So that's just something to think about because, you know, it's summer's coming to an end, but that doesn't mean gardening's done, right? We got lots to do.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and while you're doing the calls, I'm going to start making my bulb list. So.
just go to flowerbulbsareus.com and see what they've got. Oh, I will mention amaryllis, you know, our lovely amaryllis. Mm-hmm. They aren't included.
Okay.
Because her amaryllis are huge.
Huge,
beautiful, beautiful.
Wow. Well, we'll talk about that after as well. Okay, let's go to our first caller. We have Sandra on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sandra.
Thank you. Good morning, Charlie and Dean.
Good morning.
My question is, like everybody's lawn, it looks horrible at the back with the dead patches.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is digging it up, so I don't think it's grubs, but I can just pull the dead grass out very easily.
Oh.
I'd like to know, I need to reseed. I also need to put down the Scots grub killer.
Right.
What order do I do it in?
Okay, so, all right, so this is a good question. I was thinking this as well. When where I live, we haven't watered our lawns. So we have no idea if we have grubs or not because the lawns are all yellow.
Of course.
Whether there's grubs there or not, they're yellow. So but in your case, you probably have been doing some watering. And if you can tug on yellow blades of grass and they come up with no roots attached, then definitely suspect grubs under the ground. Now, the information on the package will tell you a whole bunch of things. It'll tell you about moisture levels in the soil, about applying the insecticide, and then moisture afterwards to take the insecticide down to where the grubs are. So first, and I don't have that information all in my brain right now, but I certainly have read it. So you have to follow all those directions. I personally would probably get on to the grub control first. I would not rush the reseeding or the top dressing. We call it top dressing and overseeding. I wouldn't rush that yet because we're still pretty warm. It's still a little bit too warm for the seeds to germinate. I'd be looking, I think it's going to start cooling off. So towards the end of August, maybe early mid-September will be optimal to get the seed down, some fresh soil, you know, leveling everything, but get the dead stuff out. So rake out the dead. And if you do have grubs, get onto those as soon as you can, because you want to stop them in their tracks because they're tiny right now and they're very, very killable.
Perfect. I just wasn't sure if, you know, a grub killer would interfere with grass seed or, you know, vice versa.
Probably. Yes, it probably will. I mean, the grass seed's pretty tender. Once we get that going, we stay off. So you get the grub stuff out first.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Sandra.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. Okay, the numbers again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. And we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
This is Zoomer Radio. This is The Garden Show. It is the 23rd of August. Here we are, our second last weekend of August.
What happened to the summer?
I know, it's just speeding by now. And this always happens, though, when so many people say when the CNE in Toronto starts here, which is, of course, talked about throughout Ontario, but it's a real, you know, obviously a big Toronto, GTA, GHA sort of thing, you know, because people come from outlying areas. But it always signifies what people feel is the beginning of the end of the summer holiday, anyway. Because summer goes, fall doesn't start till the 22nd of September this year. That's when the solstice is.
So speaking of holidays, Owen, our operator.
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Owen.
Hi.
Yep, he's there. I can hear him. We can all hear him. He was on holidays. Mm-hmm. So guess where he went on his holidays.
Where did he stop?
He went to go visit his dad in Consicon, and he came to my house.
I went to Charlie Dobbin's house. That's where I'm going.
Well, and Owen got to see the property that you so often talk about.
That's right. So Owen and Amanda rolled in for a little visit to the property. But I thought, you know, it's nothing special right now. It's so dry. It's just crispy.
So you had to enhance the visit.
So I thought, I'll feed them
first. You had
to supplement
the visit.
And then they won't notice that everything's yellow and wrinkly and, you know, not looking quite its best. But anyway, waffles and fruit salad and lots of coffee. And
it was great. It was a good little garden show family moment, you know. It was just a little coming together. I like that.
Well, I'm already thinking, I got to get Amanda and Owen to come to Collingwood and we'll do an Eggs Benny. How's that?
Oh, here we go. The competition.
I'm here for it all. Let's go. You can come to my place and have cereal next.
I was going to say.
Out of the boxes. The ones you cut open. The box you cut open, pour the milk in.
I want the sugar pops. Frosted Flakes.
Love it.
No, Frosted Flakes for me.
Oh, okay. Well, I've become entirely peckish. And so to distract my peckishness, I am going to jump to our next caller. We have Jean on the line from Chatham. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jean.
Thank you.
Morning.
My last name is Peck, so be careful.
There you go.
Like peckish. Look at that.
Getting peckish.
I love that. Okay, Jean, what do you got for Charlie?
My hydrangea bushes, they are huge. They're 20 years old and very few flowers.
Oh.
Is there anything I can do with them for next year?
Huh. So did you plant them 20 years ago?
Yes.
Do you have any memory of what they might have been called, the name of them?
Something lime.
Oh, you think that's like a limelight or something like that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they do get huge. And no, very few flowers. Mm. All right. So there's many kinds of hydrangea. The two main categories of hydrangea are the macrophyllas, so they're the ones with the round blooms, and they're pinks and blues and purples, and they do well in part sun, part shade. Then there's the paniculatas, which is what you've got, which want full sun, and they bloom later in the season, and their blooms are conical. They're not round. They're the shape of a cone. So,
mine are round. I've got both. These ones that I'm talking about are round. The ones that are cone-shaped, doing beautiful.
Right. Yeah, all the heat this year has been very good for those ones. Mm. So the ones with the round blooms, what stops them from blooming? If they're very old varieties, it's because they bloom on last year's growth. And that's always the challenge. How do we cut them down in the spring and still get blooms this year? But still, it is the best thing to do. If they're getting really big, particularly with your round flowering hydrangeas, your macrophyllas, they should be cut right down to buds in the spring. So that might be 4 to 6 inches tall, the entire plant, right down. The little buds come in pairs on opposite sides of the stems. And we wait till we start to see a little bit of green growth, but don't leave them 3 feet high in the spring. Take them right down. That will, they'll be a more manageable size through the summer. They should bloom. Weather conditions making a difference. They love their water. They are hydrangeas. They're called that for a reason. Hydra being water. So they do like to be kept moist. And so we don't water them every day, but we like to make sure that they, and if they're in really hot sun, they will get that wilted look and they flag, their leaves all flag, but don't water just because they're flagging. Make sure they really need water. And pray for flowers. I find they never flower consistently year after year. You get good years and not such great years. You know, they're a bit alternate that way. The paniculatas, though, the ones with the conical-shaped blooms, they bloom very consistently, planted in full sun, lovely plants to have, but get very large. Limelight hydrangea, 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide, very big plant. No matter how much you cut it back in the spring, it's going to grow big. So
yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. But don't hesitate again. Do cut them down. I do all my cutting in the spring because I love the flowers staying there all winter. I think they're very pretty in the winter. But I do pretty major pruning in the spring on all my hydrangeas. So consider that.
So you don't go down to, say, the third or fourth nodule. You just cut them down to...
Go down to nodules, but yeah, it might be the second or third or even fourth, as long as your stems are 4 to 6 inches tall above ground.
Okay.
Thanks, Jean. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call there, Jean. Numbers to call us are 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Now, I'm a little bit... not puzzled about the next caller, but I can see that it actually has something to do with birds, and I'm very, very tempted.
Yeah.
We'll answer the call now, but it might be something that will get Patricia to call back because we're going to have Paul Oliver on the line in about 10 minutes.
And he's Mr. Bird.
So let's just quickly touch base with Patricia before we go to break. Patricia from Sunderland, welcome to the Garden Show, Patricia.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're curious because you have something to do with birds, and we do have our birding expert, our sponsor, Paul Oliver, coming on the show in a bit. So what is your question exactly?
Well, I have a plant. It's called datura or moonflower, and it's supposed to be poisonous.
To people.
And we're wondering if the seeds are poisonous for birds.
You know what? I'm not positive. I would say probably not, but Paul will know for sure, and he will be joining us in about 10 minutes. Yeah. So we'll double check with him. So often, like, our digestive systems are completely different, right, between birds and mammals. So you're right. Any of the datura seeds can be very toxic to any mammal. But also I find wildlife is pretty smart. Like, they're usually they don't. Like, whether it's just they've learned, you know, the DNA has learned over the thousands and thousands of years to not eat certain things.
Right.
But generally speaking, they don't eat things that are going to kill them or make, unless they have nothing else. I mean, that becomes a desperation thing where they'll, you know, drink water that's not great, but they have to. They're so thirsty.
But
so,
we will address the question when Paul comes on.
Yeah, see if Paul's got anything to add to that. But for now, keep listening. And at this point, don't worry.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
very much, Patricia.
Calling.
Okay, we are going to go to our next break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show on this beautiful, beautiful Saturday. It really is a beautiful day. I have to tell you, I walked to work yesterday.
Was in one of Collingwood.
In Collingwood. Yes. About 3 kilometers. It's roughly 3 kilometers from where I live to the Collingwood studio. So, of course, you know, when I drive, it takes 4 or 5 minutes to get there. But, my younger son, he could use the vehicle. I said, take the vehicle. I'll walk. And it was such a beautiful day. Now, we've talked about this before. I love the heat. But it was such a beautiful day yesterday.
Yeah, it's really nice temperature
really
now.
Really beautiful.
We've lost the 30s. We're down to the 20s.
And it was really beautiful.
Yeah, today's going to be the same.
Just lovely, lovely, lovely temperature.
To be outside. In nature. Just out listening to the birds, smelling the air.
And I can't imagine that anybody's going to complain about this summer. Because some summers, people will say, oh my goodness, it rained every weekend. Yeah, we never had a nice weekend. Well, we have had so little reason to cancel anything this summer because we've had, you know, that's been the upside of it. Yeah. Outdoor activities have not had to be canceled and large.
Not generally. It was a kind of a rocky start because remember where I live in May, and this
spring.
Was true. Yeah, May was very wet.
But summer has been...
June 1st, it stopped raining where
I
live.
Yeah,
it's been very little rain. So, lots of blue sky, lots of nice beach days.
So I hope you're enjoying the weather wherever you are.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go to our next caller in Aiden. And this is Aiden is something that came up in my Facebook postings today. Welcome to The Garden Show, Carol.
Morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
Morning. And it's because apparently there's something called Starfest, which is happening in your area.
Yes.
Which is, and I have a good friend of mine who is an avid stargazer with a huge telescope that you have to pull around in a trailer. That's
how
big it is.
Yep.
And it is happening at River Place Park in Ayton, like this weekend. Is that right?
I didn't know that until you said it, but I've heard of it other years.
Yeah, Starfest. Nice. People come from all over, Ontario and the U.S. are in your place this weekend looking at the stars.
There's probably some meteor showers or something going on. Perseids usually happen around now.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do I know?
But there you go. It's Canada's largest annual amateur astronomy conference, and it's happening this weekend where you live.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That's cool.
And apparently, in addition to the stars, you have lots of caterpillars.
I am absolutely inundated with caterpillars of every shape, size, and color.
Oh.
The first ones I found, I was walking out the lane to get the mail, and I just happened to see a twig on the ground, went over to pick it up, and saw these caterpillars. Now, these things were about the size of my baby finger with extended, and then black, and then they had extended gray, white, silver hairs sticking out beyond that. They were huge, and they were all around underneath this walnut tree. So I was flicking them into a pail and got rid of them. Checked the other walnut trees, didn't find any. Went back to check the next day, got a few more. Like, I probably had 50 or 60 of them.
Wow.
Then, the next night, I happened to notice there's a whole whack size of a baseball of tent caterpillars on the side of the tree at the trunk, right at the base. And I went to the other walnut trees. Sure enough, they're all over the place, these tent caterpillars. This morning, I go out, and there's little tiny silver furry caterpillars underneath the maple tree. Like, is it just the weather? Is it just this area? I mean,
no, it's your garden. They like your garden, obviously.
I'm beginning to wonder. I mean, the tomato worms have been vicious too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, wow, so you've been getting some rain at your place?
No, we've had some, but not a lot, but we did have the heavy rain last weekend.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been, the tomato hornworms have been absolutely a menace at my place.
Really?
Okay. In the 6 years that I've lived there, every summer I'm out there picking them, and they're huge. Like, I mean, you need a little crane to pull them off the tomato, and oh gosh, they're like monsters. It's quite disgusting. But I haven't seen one this year, and I put it down to lack of rain. tomato hornworms just said, we're staying asleep this year. We'll see you next year.
Mm-hmm. Tomatoes are crispy. We don't want them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no water.
Sun-dried tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly. We don't like that flavor so much. Okay. So with the, so you've got to pick, obviously you know that, pick and drown in jars or you know, yogurt containers, water, drop of oil, everybody dies quite nicely.
5 gallon pails, Charlie.
Oof,
I can't have them in a yogurt container.
Oof,
would not
my goodness.
Do.
Oof. Okay, so the other thing is, there is something called Tanglefoot.
Tanglefoot?
Yeah, Tanglefoot. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have not.
Okay, try it, particularly on your trees. So Tanglefoot, the idea is that it's kind of like a paper tape, and it's sticky on one side.
Yeah.
So the non-sticky side goes against the bark, and you wrap it around the trunk of the tree.
Okay.
Usually it'll tell you, you know, a foot or two or 3 feet off the ground, and that sticky side is on the outside, and it's hanging on your tree, and those really obnoxious little caterpillars start climbing the trees to get up to eat the foliage, and they can't get across the sticky tape.
I think they're coming out of the trees, though.
Either way, they could be coming, because when they're... So remember,
I think they're just dropping.
So you'll find out. If you try the Tanglefoot and you don't catch any, you'll know that they are...
Mine's just a brush on Tanglefoot, a jar. So can I just paint it on the...
Yeah, again, read what it says and do the recommended. But so just always remember, caterpillars are one life stage of an insect that's going to turn into something else. So it could become a butterfly, it could become a moth, it could become a beetle sometimes, but generally speaking, the little caterpillar is just the baby form that eats an awful lot before it pupates. So pupation is the process of becoming a little cocoon. So those caterpillars, when they drop down to the ground, or climb down by the trunks of the trees, they're climbing down to hunker down into the ground and pupate. And then they'll emerge as moths or beetles or butterflies, as the case may be. So it just depends on what the caterpillars are. So, you know, if in doubt, take some photos. You can always email me photos and I can recommend whether these are keepers or ones to kill, because you know what? Sometimes they're swallowtails or monarchs or, you know, they're going to turn into something really beautiful that we don't want to kill.
Well, a quick email or a website that I looked at said that these might be a walnut something, walnut worm or something, the big fellas, and that they could be quite
devastating.
After I'd already done it, they said not to touch them with your hands because
they can
actually give off something if you have sensitive skin. But that was kind of too late. So I think these walnut ones are definitely the one. But the tent caterpillars are in the birch tree, they're in the lilacs, they're in everything.
And they
I always thought they were in the spring.
No, but you know what we get now? They're called fall webworms. So they're not the tent. Well, they are different insects, too. Tent caterpillars are very distinctive. Stripes, blue stripe, yellow dots. Fall webworms will make their webs anywhere in whatever. Yeah, birch, maple. They're not. I have them in my dogwood. So, yes. But again, with a stick, you can break up the webs, which is what you want to do, because they create the web to protect themselves so the birds can't eat them.
Yep.
So they'll go out and eat all night and go into the web during the day. So if you go and destroy the webs...
We just clip it off.
Yes. Clip off and burn is often a recommendation if you're allowed to burn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call. Thanks for the call, Carol.
Thanks for calling.
This is unbelievable, actually, because Ayton is not that big of a place. And we actually, while we're getting Paul on the line, we actually have
another call.
We have another caller on the line from Ayton. But
first, Carol's neighbor.
Yeah, it could be. But first, we do have to go to Frank in Toronto. And then we should be getting Paul Oliver's coming as well. But Frank from Toronto, welcome to the Garden Show. Frank, what do you got?
Good morning, Charlie.
Morning.
I live on a ravine lot with a downward grade going down into a conservation authority area. Mm-hmm. On that, we've had issues in the past regarding erosion, which is kind of eating away at, you know, the flat part of the land. Mm-hmm. So we also have, I have some overriding really big maple trees that have a large canopy area around it. But what I've done a few years ago is I planted some trees on the slope area in the ravine area. Mm-hmm. There is some sunlight coming through in the morning. So I noticed that although the trees are growing, they're not growing as quickly as I'd like to. But what I noticed is that if I cut some branches on some of the overriding bigger trees, I could allow more sunlight to come in and perhaps get these trees to grow faster and quicker and reinforce the land. I wanted to know if what kind of branches I can cut on the larger trees where I can allow sunlight in but not damage those trees.
Okay, good question, but a little bit tricky to explain on the radio. There's different ways to trim trees depending on what kind of trees. Maples is a good example. So we can what's called raise the canopy. So we can trim off lower branches so that we have more clearance below the trunks of the trees. We can thin the canopy, but usually, and particularly if it's really, really hot, we don't do any major trimming on big limbs. And if you are thinking about removing any big limbs, do some research first, because there's the right way and the wrong way to trim off anything that's bigger than about an inch in diameter. So it's a three-cut process. It's not just go in there with a saw and start, you know, hacking away on branches, because you'll end up doing more damage than good. As the branch drops, it'll strip down the side of the tree and take off unnecessary bark. Remember, your tools must be sharp, your cuts must be clean, you have to identify the branch collar, and you cut just on the outside edge of the branch collar, and obviously on a sunny, clear day when we do all this trimming. There's a sort of a lot of reasons why we prune, and I can see your logic on that to open up a little bit of air, a little bit of light will be good for the other trees. Yeah. Consider as well, if you can, maybe adding this fall or next spring, if you can add some, well, make sure the leaves always stay there, right? You don't clean the leaves away in the fall, do you?
No, I don't.
Good.
I allow the leaves, they got a lot of nutrition through the winter, right? They
Yeah, as the leaves break down, they release nutrients. So you can speed up the decomposition of those leaves by sprinkling, not a large quantity, but just getting out a couple of bags, a couple of shovelfuls of composted manure, which will speed up the decomposition of the leaves, which will add to the, you know, supplement the soil and, again, encourage growth. So just some, you know, think about the soil and, like you said, think about opening up that air above. Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, thanks for the call there, Frank, and good luck with that. We have Paul Oliver on the line from Urban Nature Stores, Canada's birding store. And welcome. How are you, Paul?
I'm extremely well. Glad to be on with you guys.
Morning.
I'm glad, too. And I just spotted something on your glorious website, by the way, which I didn't even have on my radar, because, as you know, I've become a birder in recent years. And I go out every day, and I top up my bird bath with a go-to drink. But you have one that can hang in the trees as well, a glass waterer.
Yeah, the glass waterers are really good.
Pretty.
Some people don't have a room for the a bird bath, or they're afraid of mosquitoes or things like that.
Okay.
And the hanging one just gives the birds a drinking thing, and you can also put it very close to the food source.
Yeah, I've never seen that before, and I love that. And it's identified there as a bestseller, so I guess people are getting into those as an option.
Yeah, and a lot of it is they've got a couple of hooks on their pole, they've got a feeder on one, a suet feeder on another, and then they've got another one, and they can just add a waterer, and the birds can just have, it's a full buffet for them.
They don't have to move.
They don't have to go to a different bar station from the food station.
No lineups. But you know what, my birds, Paul, help me with this. Something's going on right now at this time of year. The birds are there's some real aggression going on between some of the birds.
Oh.
So I've had blue jays, like one blue jay that is just not accepting the other blue jays. And they actually had, they had their beaks locked together and flung themselves to the ground. Oh no, it was like a real, like, you know, WWF thing. I don't know what was going on there. And then I've seen the same thing. The mourning doves are one of them's always fighting with the other ones.
Yeah.
And of course, goes without saying, the grackles are always fighting with somebody. And I'm like, what is going on?
And I got to tell you, Paul, things are not like that in Collingwood. My birds are living much more harmonious together than in Prince Edward County.
But is it because winter's coming? Like the brutes are trying to get all the food?
It's a couple of things. One, it could be that they're getting ready for the winter or for the migration. They're trying to fasten up and trying to get as much food as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also be that survival instinct has kicked in because of the stresses from this summer, from the drought.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much food available. A lot of natural food sources aren't there.
No kidding.
And even some birds have abandoned nesting this season because of the stresses.
Wow.
So the males haven't been able to exert themselves as much, but also it's just that survival instinct kicks in. And when it kicks in, they're not always the best friends when they're at the feeder.
Yeah, and I've never seen that. The blue jays have always just taken turns at the feeder. And then all of a sudden now there's like a, you know, like talk about testosterone, boy. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Wow. Oh, Paul, we had a caller earlier that had a question. I know that Charlie's got it marked down there.
So are you familiar with the tropical plant Datura, Paul?
The moonflower.
Exactly. So, of course, the seeds are poisonous to mammals. But Patricia called in from Sunderland, and she wondered, could the seeds be poisonous to birds?
They are poisonous in so much as they're actually hallucinogenic for the bird.
Oh.
But most birds over years of developing and in their memory avoid any of the harmful seeds. So in the case of the moonflower, if they ingest it, it could be hallucinogenic for them. But generally, the seed is of a thickness and a size that the birds won't go to anyway.
Yeah, they're big. They're definitely big.
I'm thinking that Charlie should throw some into her feed there. It might calm all those blue jays down a little bit.
I don't know. But I've also had quite a hummingbird action. Quiet summer, two hummingbirds hung out, but rarely saw them. And then all of a sudden, I think they came from your place, Dean.
Oh.
They're moving south, right? So we'll talk.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about migration, because I now have three hummingbirds that are hanging out at my place, and they are eating voraciously. Like, I'm filling. I've never had to fill hummingbird feeders. They've never been empty.
Hmm.
But now all of a sudden, they're going empty. And I have two feeders, and I'm like every 3 days, I'm filling them.
That's great.
Well, they're they're both consuming more energy now with mm-hmm. the drought and the heat and things like that. But they're also trying to consume as much, as many calories and energy bursts for that long migration. They've got a couple of thousand miles to go, and they've also got to cross the U.S. border, and who knows what that'll be this year.
They could get slowed down, right?
True enough.
They need to get really fed before that. Show some ID, get thrown out.
Yeah. We need to eat more for that. Well, listen, we'd love, we have to go to break in a moment, but this is the time, if you have a question about mm-hmm. anything bird-related, mm-hmm. because we have Paul Oliver on the line, who
he knows a lot about birds.
He knows a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or squirrels or raccoons, anything, urban nature, rural nature, Paul's pretty knowledgeable.
Give us a call. And certainly if you have a gardening question, don't hesitate as well. But this is the perfect time for you to call with a birding question as well. Okay, the numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We will be right back with Paul Oliver here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And we do have, we're going to go to Barb. We do have Paul still on the line, but Barb's been waiting a while. She's also calling from Ayton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Barb.
Oh, thank you. And good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
I was just wondering with a previous call from Carol, when she was saying that about the tomato worms, is it safe to eat the tomatoes then?
Oh, sure. Tomato hornworm usually eats foliage, and they'll devastate your plants by eating the leaves. Every now and then they'll take some bites out of the actual tomatoes, but it's fine. Yeah, there's nothing toxic for us from those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so you can still make your BLTs.
Safe. Yeah.
Perfectly safe to,
yes.
to eat the tomatoes.
And the hornworms are big enough that you could almost have them as a side dish.
But what I was calling about is how far back can you cut the silver lace vine?
Okay. So that is a very, very vigorous vine. It grows quickly,
yes.
and it's lovely, and it's blooming now. It should be blooming now.
Uh-huh.
If it's just getting out of control,
yeah.
you have two options to cut it back. I personally would try and cut it back in the spring and enjoy the flowers this season. Next spring, you could cut it back pretty hard when it's still dormant. So April, say, March, April, May, depending on the spring, cut it back by as much as a half and eliminate what you've cut, compost what you've cut back, and then direct where it's growing. Like if it's really doing a takeover, you may need to actually remove some more, just not large quantities, but some more just to keep it growing where you want it. Doing anything radical now is not a good idea. You could trim some, but not a lot at this time of year because believe it or not, you can kill them if they're trimmed too hard in the hot summer.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Not even later on in the fall then.
You could. Yeah, you could. Once it's dormant and the leaves have dropped and it's November, you could then do what you could have done in the spring. So you could take it back by a half once it's dormant.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call there, Barb.
Thank you.
Two calls from Ayton today. That's craziness.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it
as well. And we do have a couple of Paul. I know you're there, Paul. Get yourself ready because we have a couple of callers on the line that have questions for you. Okay, my friend.
So, excellent.
Yeah. So we have Diane on the line. She's calling from Toronto, and you have a question for Paul. Is that right, Diane?
Hi. Yes. Hi, everyone.
Good morning.
Hi. Welcome to the Garden Show.
Good morning.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Paul, I have seen a woodcock twice now in my backyard. Once about 3 years ago in February, and just last August.
Mm.
So my question is, I understand they're shoreline birds. Is that unusual for them to...
In Toronto?
Yeah.
...to be hanging around? Like, yeah. I think it was there for about 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It is. It's unusual because they're normally near the water areas and things like that. Sometimes what you do is you get juveniles that get a little confused or they just need a resting area or something like that, and you'll find them in unusual areas.
Hmm.
But generally, they don't stay that long. And that they could also be looking for things like earthworms and insects, because they're big eaters of that as well. But generally, you'll spot them, see them maybe a day or two, and then they'll have moved on into a different area. Last summer, I had a huge pileated woodpecker show up at my house, which is very unusual. He hung around, banged on the top of the maple tree for about two days, and then he was gone, never to be seen again.
Just as well.
His normal, natural habitat.
It certainly was a treat, and I'll tell you, it went around the whole backyard for about 10 minutes poking its beak, and you're right, it was probably searching for worms.
Yes. In the ground.
And it just flew off. I mean, we have a dog, too. And so I was very surprised to see him on both occasions. And again, like I said, once in February, which was, I thought, a bit unusual. But there's more water in February. And then last month, this month, August, I just saw it a week or two ago.
Probably looking for water.
Maybe, yeah. So, it was wonderful to see. I love it.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about wild birding. We have all of our traditional birds that we see in our backyards, but then occasionally you'll see something that's unusual that has gotten off their flight path a little bit, and it's just added into that life book of birds that you must be keeping.
That's right. The list.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, and nice to hear you.
Cool.
Thanks very much for the call there, Diane.
I was just going to say, so Paul, tell us a little bit. So you are just near Napanee right now at the Oliver Farm. And
yes, I am. I'm looking out watching the sheep graze right now.
Oh, is there something for them to graze on at your place?
It's pretty brown grass, but they're still making a go of it.
Okay, good. Because I know it's super dry where you are and where I live as well. You sent me a photo at one point of the cracked earth just from the lack of moisture. So what's the impact of all that drought when it comes to wild birds? What do you think about, does that affect migration? Do they leave earlier heading for water, or what happens?
Yeah, sometimes they'll leave earlier, and sometimes they'll leave later because they're still trying to fatten up, and especially if food sources are scarce, they want to make sure they have all that fat before they head off. Right. What you'll find is a lot of their food sources, we think of seeds, which decline because the plants haven't gone to full seed, or they've dropped early because of the dryness. But also a lot of the insects that we have, like one of the things I hear this summer is, we've had very few mosquitoes.
Yes, it's true.
Which is great for humans, not so good if you're a purple martian, and that's what you feed on. And so a lot of those food sources are short. And then the other thing that happens is, as water supply diminishes, then you'll get actually more animals and more birds going to one location. And that's also where you'll get the predator animals showing up. And so it's higher risk for that. But one of the things that happens is sometimes birds will, if it's really stressful, they just abandon the mating and the reproduction process. So they skip a year. So you can actually, if you had a couple of years of drought, you're going to see a fairly rapid decline in the bird population.
Right.
And so as human helpers, putting out water for the birds is probably the top thing we can do right now. Putting out seed that doesn't require a lot of work, deshelled sunflowers. I even actually add suet at this time of the year.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I do a lot of suet,
but
it's rich, fatty. It's got lots of moisture in it, and you'll find birds that wouldn't normally eat it at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. The chickadees are going crazy on the suet.
Yes, my bird bath has been just, birds have been lined up for the bird bath. I had 7 birds all in there together.
Really?
Yeah,
it's nice
feeding.
That you can close it because of the extreme heat, so good for you.
I just have to start keeping it full when they're all, they splash all the water out.
Good problems to have. Yeah. Okay, we'll be back with more bird chat, more garden chat, but we have to go to break. Back with more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and we do have Paul Oliver, who is the owner of our show sponsor, the Urban Nature Stores, yeah, on the line. I do have a quick question, Paul. How many locations do you have in the greater Toronto area?
Well, altogether, we have 9 locations. We have Pickering, Oshawa, Don Mills, Etobicoke, and Mississauga right in the GTA area, and then we have Ancaster, Niagara, and Kingston as well.
Right. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah, I was at your Don Mills store yesterday.
Oh, wonderful. And I'm thinking I'm going to hit the North York store on the way out today, on the way up there, so I have to grab a couple things. When did Urban Nature Stores, when did you start this all, Paul?
We started this about 20 years ago.
Okay.
It's great. Yeah, and you've won all kinds of awards for being the number one gift store or like cool store for cool stuff. Like you just have quite an it's not just bird seed and not just bird feeders. There's a lot going on in those stores.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing is when customers recognize us for being more than just birding. It's gifts, educational toys for kids, nature-inspired activities for families to do.
Yeah, binoculars, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that there's a day coming up in early September that you'll be doing a big donation.
Yeah, so September 4th, Thursday, it is National Wildlife Day, and we actually do our Seeds of Kindness event twice a year, and we do it on this date in the fall. And what we do is we donate 10% of all of our bird seed sales to the Ontario Wildlife Rescue Organization. Okay. And it supports about 50 different rescue organizations around Ontario. I love it because it recognizes the importance of wildlife. But more importantly, wildlife rescues in Ontario receive zero government funding. Mm-hmm. They rely solely on donations and thousands of volunteer hours that volunteers put in, and they do God's work when there's an orphaned animal or injured animal, and it's not just what we think of small animals. There are rescues that handle bears and help the bears reintegrate into the wildlife when they've been orphaned and things like that.
Wonderful. So it's, Paul, speaking of wildlife, I do have a wildlife question on the line for you. We're going to Mary, who is in Kingston, one of the places that you have a store. And Mary, you're a first-time caller, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, there we got your garden wings.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
There you go. And you fire away. Paul's all ready for your question.
Thanks, everybody. Good morning. Paul, I wanted to ask you a question. I moved to Kingston recently, and I would like to put out bird feeders, but I've been told by my neighbors, and because of construction, we have rodents. And I've always heard, you know, you don't want to put out bird feeders if you have rodents. So what can I do to attract the birds and feed them?
Yes, you can definitely put out feeders that don't attract rodents to the ground. It's a very common question that we get, particularly when there's new construction going on in different neighborhoods and that, is you want to make sure you're putting out seed that doesn't end up on the ground that's going to attract them. So avoid doing anything that has shells on it. So the one I use is sunflower hearts. The birds eat 100% of it, and get a good feeder that the bird actually reaches into the port to grab the food out so that they can't actually just toss it around by their head moving too quickly or that. And if they reach in, they'll consume 100% of that, and then the amount of seed that falls to the ground that could be an attractant to any type of rodent is microscopic if it exists at all. What often happens is people will put in poor quality seed with a whole bunch of fillers and a whole bunch of shells, and the birds toss half of that on the ground, and it just becomes a buffet that attracts various animals on the ground. If you avoid the seed falling to the ground, you won't have that problem. Some people will supplement by spraying the area around their yard with plant skid, which just tells them that it's not a safe area to go into. It's not harmful for the birds or other animals or anything to supplement that. But what I find in my backyard is just putting it in like a Squirrel Buster Plus, the brome feeders, which are really well designed with sunflower hearts. The amount of seed that falls to the ground will not be enough to attract any of the rodents, and you'll avoid that situation no problem.
Okay.
There we go.
There you go. So thanks very much for that question, Mary. And holy cow, Paul, we have, it looks like we've almost run out of runway here.
We have.
And we've enjoyed having you on the show.
But those are really good tips because I do find, well, The worst are the mourning doves. They just sweep whatever seed onto the ground for all their buddies because they're ground feeders. And then the raccoons roll in when the sun goes down to clean up whatever's on the ground. So, yeah, good tips for trying to avoid that.
It's with the port, if the bird is actually reaching into it to take the seed out, it reduces the amount of flying seed, as I refer to it, by about 95%.
Yeah.
Paul, want to mention your website, which is very nice, is very simple, urbannaturestore.ca, urbannaturestore.ca.
And remember to shop on Thursday, September the 4th, to support the donation for National Wildlife Day. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a few seconds. You mentioned there's a train that runs close, like the main train there, the CN rail, runs right by your farm, and that there's been some grass fires lately.
Yes, yesterday, hats off to the Napanee Fire Department. They were out here on site and put it out fairly quickly. Mm. But it sparked, and I think there were about five different farms that actually had fires, grass fires.
So folks have to be careful. Everybody has to be careful.
Well, I know. But how do you stop the sparks off the trains?
Off the trains, yeah.
So what do you do?
I think that CN probably has a few more things to do that they need to look into to remedy that. But just make sure that we're not accidentally starting any fires because it's a nightmare for the wildlife.
All right, Paul, thank you. Sorry, we do have to run. It's been great to have you on the show.
Yes, it has.
Always
thank
a pleasure.
You. Thanks a bunch for joining us, and thanks for coming into the studio, Dean. Thanks, Owen. Couldn't do any of it without you. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.